This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Richard Wollstonecraft. We're going to be discussing the finale of Twin Peaks. Richard, great having you back on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And yes, Twin Peaks came to a close. And I got to admit, boys, I was a bit disappointed. You know, I hate to criticize the master. You know, David Lynch, obviously, I'm a big fan of, and obviously, he's a big reference in my cinematic career of my own and all that kind of stuff. But I was a little bit disappointed. I mean, I was hoping to watch it again the last 2 hours before talking to you today. But as we know, we've switched the schedule on today's podcast. But that's okay. And
maybe the way I kind of see it is I think there's two scenarios. One scenario is that David Lynch is keeping it open-ended in case there's going to be a fourth season, but I think what's most likely is David Lynch is ending his career and giving the middle finger to his audience.
I had a big discussion on Facebook with it. I mean, I have a few people from the film community who are big Twin Peaks fans, so we had a bit of a chat about it all. And obviously, my initial reaction was negative towards the ending. But then, I mean, a few people really loved it. And I guess, you know, I mean, how did he end season one? Up in the air. You know, how did he end season two? Even more up in the air. And so how does he leave season three? I mean, what do we expect? I mean,
so, yeah, there very well could be a season four.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, even if this is the end, it's his nature to want to leave a lot of questions unanswered. I mean, that's
The original series, the ending of season two, he did leave questions unanswered, but there was still a sense of conclusion.
Well, there was a sense of conclusion in episode 17, you know. I mean, even though it was a bit stupid, I mean, to be perfectly honest. I mean, what, the episode before, he wakes, Cooper from his coma. You know, he was in a coma, of all things, after, you know, being Dougie for, what, 16 episodes. Which was a ridiculous thing to do, to be perfectly honest with you, I think. I mean, I think about five episodes of Dougie, or even six, could have been a lot of fun. And you could have done a lot of interesting stuff with that. But really leaving Kyle MacLachlan's, you know, Cooper character in basically... You know, I mean, there are different story arcs you can do. And you see them if you watch shows like, you know, Deadwood, for example. When they had that Swearengen character, the Fantastics, you know, the mean guy in Deadwood. They made him sick, I think, for the last season three. He was basically, you know, held up in bed for most of the season. It's a terrible thing to do because the most dynamic character should be out there doing things. He should be the, you know, I mean, basically the main...
Yeah, in a sense, Agent Cooper becomes, to this season, what Laura Palmer was to the original.
He becomes sort of out of action a bit. And, you know, the main narrative driver was Gordon Cole, which is obviously David Lynch's character. David Lynch, I mean... The fact that he was...
Well, but Gordon Cole becomes a new Cooper, but, I mean, Kyle MacLachlan's a dynamic actor. I'd like to see more of him, but I don't mind having Gordon Cole and take over.
Why couldn't Gordon Cole have been playing... Gordon Cole's whole cameo was sort of funny in the sense it was like, oh, well, you know, he's Coop's boss because, you know, he is the boss of the show. I mean, Julie Cruz called David Lynch the Emperor recently and complained about his behaviour. I mean, I imagine he is a bit of a dictator, you know. And it seems like there seems to be two camps of people who work on Twin Peaks. There are those who kind of like worship at the shrine of David Lynch, who get up every morning and genuflect to his statue and worship at the base of his feet and kiss his feet and, you know, basically, you know, hero worship him. So, and there are those who critique him a little bit and never work with him again. So it's like, well, you know. I don't know. I think you should be able to critique someone a little, even if you work with them. And, you know, I imagine he isn't perfect, which he isn't. You know, I think you could tell there are a lot of... Even though I really did enjoy season three, and there are a lot of really good things about it that I enjoyed watching it every week. You know, I often watched it with Kristen Condon. We had a great time watching it. And but then, you know, I don't know. There was just something crap about it.
Yeah, but as I was saying, I don't mind the ending if it's an opening, a cliffhanger for season four. But if this is it, then basically it's a terrible ending. It all factors into whether there's going to be a season four.
Well, I mean, to me, the show felt like a final statement from David Lynch. I mean, he may still go on and make a couple of films, or I don't know what his intention is, but he hasn't made a film since Inland Empire, which was not very well received. And then before that, his film was his previous film was Mulholland Drive, which was considered a masterpiece. And that was finished in 2001. And then, but originally it was shot earlier as it was meant to be a TV series. So he's only really done almost the last 20 years. He's only really done two pieces of work. But you know, there's a lot of influences you can see. Also, Lost Highway. I thought there's a lot of the influence of the film Lost Highway.
Oh, the scene where they're driving at night and the footage of the road.
Yes, there's a lot of references to that, but also the idea of, I think, two different time zones or two different... That's what he was playing with at the end there when he, you know, when at that, you know, he's with the real Diane and then he heads towards, like, they're almost like electric pylons. It seems like they travel in time there somehow. Now, I don't know, I mean, you know, there's a lot of reference points throughout the show of people moving between dimensions. And the other thing that really annoyed me is that he spent, like, you know, basically the whole show getting out of the Black Lodge. He left the Black Lodge, then he was Dougie. And then as soon as he was back...
Yeah, now with the Black Lodge, it's not like he's trapped there. It's like he can go in, back and forth, and that kind of goes against the whole narrative.
What the fuck was that about? He can just come and go as he pleases now. And it was like, that just didn't make any sense at all. And it was like, you know, it seemed to be a real struggle, but he was trapped in the Black Lodge. But I don't know, maybe it's because, you know, the Bad Dale... had been sent back to the Black Lodge and been sent to hell or whatever by that weird guy with the fucking hand or whatever.
Oh, yeah. So what do you think about the whole makeover of the Black Lodge from the red room to the black and white room?
Well, I don't know if that is the Black Lodge. The black and white room is probably a different space. The Black Lodge appears to be some kind... I don't know, I always thought it was hell, but it could be like a purgatory. Because at the
so
end,
maybe the black and white room is actually hell.
Oh, no. I think the Black and White Room is where the giant lives. And the giant calls himself the fireman in one episode. So I think
that's also a reference to the theater scene in Mulholland Drive.
Yeah, sure. But that also could be... It could be more like where God lives. Or, you know, it could be more like heaven or something. Or, you know, like...
Oh, the reference to the White Lodge. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, obviously you don't know. There seem to be different spaces. There was, like, the purple space... There was the black and white space. There was the red room. They were the three spaces.
Then there was the weird, surreal scene where he ends up in the ocean. He goes up into outer space and sees...
Yep, there's a bit of that. I mean, that was ended up in the purple room. So that's like a gateway to the purple room. So I don't know. These are different. Maybe there are different levels of purgatory. If you've read Dante's Inferno, you know there are different levels of hell. There are different levels of purgatory. And there are even different levels of heaven. So, you know, I think David Lynch probably has a strata in mind, something similar to Dante's Inferno. And we've only ever seen probably four or five different sections. Obviously, some have a more, you know, Luciferian or purgatory dimension. And others, you know, maybe might be more benevolent. It seemed like the giant appeared to be benevolent. But though, I mean, one can't be sure on these things, you know?
Pillater is joined with us. Pillater, what do you think about the scene where they find the character Naido naked in the woods?
Well, you know, I actually did look over some of the new Twin Peaks, and I actually quite like it. As for the naked part, I wasn't thinking that on top of my head, but yeah, I do think the ending is a little... I don't want to say cliche, but it is this kind of weird, as we were just saying, this David Lynch kind of, whether is he retiring from the industry or is he just doesn't really have anything good to say and he's just repeating the same Lynchian Twin Peaks formula, and it's just pretty much like the reason why anybody would watch Star Wars The Force Awakens. You rewatch Star Wars again and it's the same thing like watching, I guess, Twin Peaks again. And then it becomes, well, because there's so many reboots today, why would we invest time in this reboot? And so I would say it's kind of strange where does David Lynch have anything really innovative to say, or is he just now repeating himself? So
one thing I did feel that, I mean, obviously his whole career is based around the idea of mystery, right? And I mean, to be honest, I mean, I've always liked that about, you know, but I did feel that in the last 2 hours of Twin Peaks, if there's ever a time he was going to wrap it up, even if he did leave a mystery at the end, to be honest, I didn't necessarily mind that little mystery, but I didn't feel even the way he wrapped up that thing, you know, they all went to the sheriff's office in Twin Peaks.
Well, then, remember in our last show, we predicted that there would be a showdown with the doppelganger and the good Cooper and the sheriffs at Glastonbury Grove, and that didn't exactly happen, but there was showdown at the sheriff's department, so we were partially correct.
Yeah, I know. If you think about it, that's all that happened. Basically, Cooper woke up in Las Vegas, he traveled to Twin Peaks, the bad Dar was sitting in the office, and then the buddy secretary, who's one of the weakest characters in the whole show. I mean, she's funny, you know. I mean, I like that character. What's her name again? I can't remember. But like, you know, she shoots him. She kills the bad Dale, and that's how hard he was. Then he's laying on the ground, and those weird, you know, demons with the black face come to repair him again. But then the guy with the he was basically like the Hulk. He was like wearing one of those Hulk fists that you see kids wear or whatever. You know, it's like the massive punch or whatever. So he can punch Bob back into hell or whatever, or back into the Black Lodge. I don't know, mate. It all felt very, I don't know. It felt weak. It felt unsatisfactory. And then basically all those other storylines vanished. What was the point of the storyline with, say, Shelley's daughter, Richard Horn, you know, that other guy who killed himself in the woods? I mean, all these other stories that they sort of began to develop.
Yeah, they don't. Well, they're fine to kind of give us a follow-up on the other characters, but they don't necessarily lead to the grand narrative. What do you think about the final of the third to last scene where they perform Audrey's dance and then you see Audrey Horn in a dream?
Yeah, I mean, an example, you know, Audrey Horn, who was obviously ignored for the majority of the series, then appears to be – there was a lot about that. I remember I was talking to Kristen about it, like, because Kristen really hated the way that she'd been portrayed as going out with that weird dwarf or whatever he was. Like, as if Audrey Horn would date someone like that. Not in 1,000 years would Audrey Horn date a character like that.
What do you think about Audrey Horn in the original series?
Well, she was fucking hot. She was fantastic. She was the hottest. Obviously, the last 25 years haven't been kind to the actress. She looks a lot older. Obviously, she's probably done a lot of cocaine and a lot of fucking boozing or something to have a face like that. I mean, but also women age differently. Some women, if they're very, very lucky, age well. I think Shelley, for example, has aged very well. She looked very hot still in the new show and quite fuckable. And but the girl playing Laura Palmer and the one playing Audrey Horn, they look like they'd aged through, you know, drugs and alcohol. And, you know, look, I guess, it's 25 years. They must be in their late 40s probably, or early 50s even. So, you know, I mean, that is what it is. And I love the Audrey character. And obviously she seemed to have had an affair with the bad Cooper, because I think Richard Horn, who I wanted to start the Richard Horn fan club, obviously that came to an end pretty quick because he obviously died in Cooper sent him on top of that rock, which is another strange thing, these weird coordinates. You know, it just seems like...
Well, originally there was one coordinate that led to Glastonbury Grove, but you're saying you think he's going overboard with the coordinates. Like, every single place has to be a coordinate now.
Yeah, there's all these coordinates. They're traveling to all these coordinates throughout the whole show, and most of the coordinates are meaningless. There's nothing there. And even when they catch up with, you know, Philip Jeffries, I thought maybe they had gone to...
Philip Jeffries as a teapot.
As a teapot. I mean, you know, what a load of bullshit. I mean, you know, I have to be honest with you, David Lynch. I don't know if you listen to these things, but really, couldn't you come up with something a bit better than that? I mean, you know, obviously they could have gone to David Bowie before he died and got him sitting in a room, I don't know, just talking. You're talking to Cooper, you know, and that would have been a great thing to do. I thought if we were lucky, we might have been in for that. But no, it's a silly teapot, and it's just, you know, it just basically Philip Jeffries doesn't exist anymore. He's now just some weird teapot. I don't know. Sometimes it crosses over into stupidity, and I think that's what David Lynch has to watch sometimes. Is that, you know, his ideas are great. His surrealism is so brilliant when it's spot on, but when it becomes a bit ridiculous or when it becomes a bit annoying, and he does that thing too where he takes his time with a scene. You know, like one of the episodes of the show, it ended with like a guy mopping the floor for like 10 minutes.
I mean, that is classic Lynch, but sometimes he overindulges.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, look, I heard that there was a, of Inland Empire, I heard there was a 16-hour version of Inland Empire.
Really? It wouldn't surprise me, but that's actually, Inland Empire is the one David Lynch film I haven't seen. I've seen most of them.
should see it. It's worth saying. I liked it, but I mean, my friend Mark Savage was working as an editor with David Lynch at the time, and he saw the 16-hour version. And apparently, David Lynch came in and went, "Hey, boys, what do you think?" And they go, "Well, it's a bit long." You know what I mean? Like, obviously, and then on one DVD version of Inland Empire, there's about 2 hours of extras, so you can watch like a 5-hour version of Inland Empire. You know, I found most of it interesting, but you can see a lot of the surreal aspects and a lot of the more dull aspects of the new Twin Peaks on display in what he was attempting to do with Inland Empire. Obviously, he's experimenting, and he, you know, I guess he continues to experiment. You really, I guess in that sense, you do have to, you know, take your hat off to the guy. He continues to experiment right up until, how old is he now? In his early 70s. So, I mean, look, you know, one shouldn't be too harsh, and we should also say that David Lynch does have the right to do whatever the hell he likes, you know, after such a stellar career. And whatever way you look at it, Twin Peaks certainly is interesting, with season 3, even if it had some problems, at least from my perspective.
When you were watching Cooper drive Laura Palmer back to Twin Peaks, what were you expecting to happen? Obviously, you weren't expecting the cliche where there'd be like some big welcome home party. If obviously not, but you were. What were you expecting?
Well, I actually thought maybe there was something going on with the mother. I mean, because there was that weird episode where the mother.
Oh, with the bar, where she kills that guy at the bar, and you have no idea what's going on with her.
She appears to have a demon inside her, and that when she was watching television earlier, she was watching a kind of show of animals just tearing themselves to shreds. And I often thought, well, maybe is the mother of you know, Grace Zabriskie, is she somehow possessed by some kind of demon as well? And maybe that's how, you know, maybe she knew all the whole time that, you know, Leland Palmer was diddling his daughter. And, you know, like that could have been interesting. And I thought there could have been some kind of confrontation. Or that maybe, you know, when they went to that house, maybe Leland Palmer and Grace Zabriskie were living there. You know what I mean? I thought that would have been interesting. And then, you know, even if they're playing different people.
Well, they did show Leland Palmer in the Black Lodge. I think it was the last episode, yeah.
I mean, it was rumored that Leland Palmer was going to be in it. And I thought, how the hell is he going to be in it? And basically, he was only in two or three shots and all in the Black Lodge. I don't know. I thought that was a waste. He's such a brilliant actor. They could have brought him back as a different character. I don't know. A lot of it, to be honest, felt lazy in relation to the script. You know, there are many new characters that they could have made those characters from Twin Peaks, even people playing other characters. You know, they could have been, you know, he could have reused Ray Wise, you know. He could have been the boss of, you know, of Dougie, for example. You know, he could have been Dougie's boss. I don't know. You could have reused actors in different parts. I don't know. I just think if they're going to go full weird, they could have done a lot more and made more of the original characters and actors from Twin Peaks, even if they cast them in different roles, as new characters and various things. I don't know. I guess they decided to do what they did. And though I am glad there is a season 3, somehow it left a slight bad taste in my mouth. And and again, just with the confusion at the end, it almost makes a lot of his work, if you look back at all his work, it casts a shadow on all his work now. There is the thought that maybe there is nothing to all of it. Maybe it's all just a bunch of bullshit, you know, where it's confused. He has no idea what's going on in any of it. It's all just a giant mystery because there is no explanation to any of it. And I mean, maybe that's his statement, but I don't know. That's not exactly a powerful statement. Like, okay, it was a bunch of bullshit, you know?
With the whole footage from the film Fire Walk With Me, is it sort of implied that Cooper goes back in time and changes history so Laura Palmer isn't killed?
It was certainly that implication. And obviously maybe that's part of Dale Cooper's pride or hubris that he thinks he can change. You know, he takes Laura Palmer's hand, you know, after she's, you know, at Sparkwood in 21 and before she meets up with, you know, what's his name? You know, the Eric DeRay character from the original show. He was in
it. James?
No. What's the name of the guy? Shelley's husband.
Oh, I forget his name, but I know who you're talking about.
As well, but you know who I mean. And the fat guy. They have like this orgy just before she gets killed. They have this sex scene. Anyway, so he grabs her in between and walks her off. And he seems to be trying to save her, basically maybe going to take her home so she doesn't get killed. And then there's a kind of flashback to Jack Nance where he goes out fishing. And you see him fishing and... it's as if he doesn't discover the body, and as if somehow history has been changed. But then it cuts back, and you hear this scream, and she vanishes, and you hear this weird clicking noise. This is click, And right at the beginning, when the giant puts on this record player and says, you know, you'll know this sound is very important. You know, something very important is happening when you hear this, and it's click 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 click. So I don't know. Maybe this is the dimension where there's been a kind of jump in the. I guess when you change time, you change the timeline, you know, and you would create a whole new world would be born of it. If you could go back in time and just change one major event, kill Hitler or, bump off Napoleon or, do anything like that, kill Winston Churchill or something, you would change the whole course of history.
What do you think about the Naedo character and how she later on transforms into Diane?
What did you think of that, Pelita? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I was watching that scene and I was thinking, Pilliter must have really liked that.
No. I did watch half of, some of the new Twin Peaks. And if there's anything I do like the film in it. I'm not talking about the plot or about what exactly happened, but I do like the film quality upgrade of the new Twin Peaks, where I felt that the old Twin Peaks, it looks like, as we said this before, it looks like a grainy soap opera, and you couldn't really, but then that became a part of its kind of nostalgic kind of view of it. But filming of it, of the new Twin Peaks, looks like it's theater-wise. You sit down in a theater and watch it, and you think, wow, this is a newer Twin Peaks and a new, reamped version of it. But
yeah, that's definitely true. But I mentioned this on the original one. I kind of like the grainy style because the original Twin Peaks had a romantic quality. Like, it kind of portrays the town as a idealized place you go on, say, a summer vacation, and you go fishing and hiking and stay at the Great Northern and go have cherry pie at the R&R's Diner. But the new Twin Peaks portrays it more realistically. It's less romanticized.
Yeah, there definitely was a less romanticization. And in relation to that character, the Asian character with no eyes, who they discovered nude at in one of their weird coordinate,
Yeah, height. I was thinking it reminds me of something out of a Trevor Brown illustration, if you're familiar with him.
Yeah, I'm familiar with his work. He did a cover for the Melbourne Underground Film Festival once. He's another creep. But anyway, I won't get into him.
That's funny.
What else was I going to say? I did actually like that character, because she said, she was in the prison cell and she was making like the monkey noise, and then what the fuck was that about? I mean, that was not resolved. Yeah.
Explain it. Then what do you think about that Chad character?
Chad, I mean, he was funny. There was a character like that in Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. He was like the deputy at this other sheriff's department where Chris Isaacs goes in Fire Walk With Me. There's like a belligerent, smartass kind of sheriff or deputy who worked for Sheriff Cable. So it seems to be a continuation of that character. I liked that character. I thought it was funny, but again, it went nowhere. And I think the fact that woman with no eyes didn't really go anywhere. What was the whole point of it? She originally started off in the purple room, and then she rocks up at that weird, that grove, and then they take her to jail. And why did she have no eyes? What the hell was she doing? It was not revealed. There's not even a hint as to what who she was or where, what the hell that was about at all.
And well, that's what David Lynch does. He maybe gives us like 60 to 70% of the information, and the remainder is a mystery. Which I don't necessarily. I mean, that's his style. I think that's what makes him a remarkable filmmaker. It's just with this episode, it gives us really very little information. Like, I don't mind leaving maybe a third of it with a sense of mystery, but he pretty much left us like 70% of the information he didn't give us.
Yeah, I mean, in relation to her character, he gave us nothing. She was from the purple room, and then she rocks up in Twin Peaks, and then she's in the jail. And there seems to be everyone's coming to see her. Both the bad Dale and the good Dale seem to have an interest in that character. And then the bad Dale gets killed, and that's it. And then there was all this talk about Judy. Judy was a reference from Fire Walk With Me. That was one of the things Philip Jeffrey said. We're not going to talk about Judy. We're not going to talk about Judy at all. And what did Judy end up being? Some diner in this town of. What was the name of that town?
Odessa.
I mean, what's that a reference to? Is that a Nazi reference? There was an interesting other reference to Nazism with the Nazi bell that was in the it was like one of these secret weapons the Nazis were meant to have invented. That was also referenced in an earlier episode. It was in the Giants room in the black and white area. It was with the Giant. There was like the Nazi bell and a few different things. He has these kind of weird, whether they be instruments or technology that are maybe old or kind of almost Tesla-like. And also, there's also subtle references to Jack Parsons and, you know, the kind of occultism that Jack Parsons was into. That seems to play on an almost background kind of informative nature to a lot of what's going on in Twin Peaks. But it's all very strange. But I guess, I mean, how did you interpret the end? So after he, you know, they got rid of the bad Dale and they sent him to the Black Lodge, you know, what happens? I mean, he goes off and tries to rescue Laura Palmer, who's in another dimension, who's no longer Laura Palmer, and then takes her back to her parents' house, and she doesn't recognize it, and then she sort of does recognize it, and screams, like, ah! And that's it. I mean,
yeah, it pretty much, maybe nothing happens. Maybe,
yeah,
maybe it's just, or she just stays at Twin Peaks, and she's kind of a quirky, delusional character who hangs out at the roadhouse, and then there's no grand scheme to it, really. And that's basically it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I guess in the sense that, like, David Lynch shows you what he wants to show you, and he showed us that. And, I mean, I guess I was looking at the timeline as, you know, as the episode kept going, I think it's only got 15 minutes to go. What can he do in 15 minutes? And when it got down to about 8, I thought, oh, hang on, this is it. This is whatever this is.
Oh,
this is,
yeah, they basically had that scene where they were at the house where she used to live, and there were these new people there. And the key thing is, I think, is she asked, what year is it?
Like, no, he asks what year is it,
and there's some significance to that.
That's obviously...
That's obviously David Lynch saying that he's done with it, making movies for good. That's how I interpret it.
Yeah, maybe, and that it has moved in time. You know, this could be his final statement, and look, I don't know. I think it's the kind of thing, too, I did actually want to watch it again before having this conversation, because... As I said, my reaction was negative, but I've had negative reactions to David Lynch's things before, and then I've watched them a couple of times and then gone, oh, actually, that's genius. So maybe we just haven't studied this enough, maybe also, too, once you get used to what they've done, like, you accept that David Lynch has done this. Okay, he hasn't done what we want. You know, he's done this. And then you watch it again, and you pick up other things. And he's definitely the kind of filmmaker that you pick up, you know, different bits and pieces when you watch his film again. So maybe when we watch this, we'll appreciate it better. But yeah, look, you know, it's all very interesting, and I think the whole of Twin Peaks season 3 has been interesting. You never know; there might be a season 4, even if David Lynch is only involved marginally, and some of these questions might be addressed. But I personally think this is it.
Yeah, I think this is it, but if there is a season 4, what would you like to see? I think originally it wasn't our prediction that this show would end in the White Lodge. That was originally a prediction.
Well, yeah, I sort of wanted a happy ending, and I guess there was a brief happy ending at the beginning of episode 18 where Cooper makes another one of these tulpas. A tulpa is like...
The tulpa is the artificial person that becomes Dougie Jones. So basically that's so... his wife and son can have a father, basically, just for that.
Yeah, he creates another one who I guess would be a good version of Dougie rather than the bad version, which is why Dougie was...
Well, on the topic of Dougie Jones, I read an interesting comment. Someone said instead of seeing Dougie Jones as like an imbecile, he views him more as this as a kind of Zen master. You could interpret him that way.
I agree. And, I mean, I thought there was something interesting about the idea of... Dougie Jones has been... I think many of us live our lives in a way like we're sleepwalking through them, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we might have a family or a beautiful girlfriend or something, and there's the idea that you sleepwalk through your life. Somnambulance, I think, is the name of it. Somnambulanceness, and that's a theme that David Lynch has dealt with before. The idea that you can go through your life in a kind of almost zombie-like state and then suddenly snap out of it to be the person who you really are. I think that was one of the main metaphors of the whole of Season 3. And I think that is a valuable metaphor, if you were to take a kind of metaphor from the whole show, that, you know, you can live your life, that maybe we aren't living the authentic lives we should. And that, you know, I guess obviously through something like David Lynch's interest in transcendental meditation, you know, wake up, be the person who you want to be. Don't allow yourself to, you know, kind of sleepwalk through life. And and, you know, wake up and be who you want to be. I mean, that was sort of a message I took from the episode where Dougie woke up. And I thought,
yeah, because that's sort of a big theme in Lynch's work, is reality exists as how the character perceives reality. He plays on the subconscious, but maybe a character is not so much reality is what it is, but reality is distorted by the character's perception. Mulholland Drive epitomizes that out of all his films. But the way sort of he's done a whole talk on transcendental meditation, and he talks about the realm of the human conscious, and he says that we're only, there's this one line, and we're existing, we're just touching into a very narrow plane, like we're not accessing our entire full potential of our conscious.
Yes, I think that's a definite thing that David Lynch has been interested in the last 20, 25 years, so I think it makes sense that he would deal with something like that. But it's also kind of augured in his earlier work, even in June, with something like The Sleeper Must Awaken. You know, there's that whole line that's in June. I think that was one of the things that interested him about doing that film, was the idea of, you know, the Kyle MacLachlan character as a kind of messiah in waiting. And but look, you know, there's another interesting motive, and I think we should discuss it. The idea, there's a line in Twin Peaks Season 3 where, you know, there's a line, it's talking about, like, you know, the dreamer, but who is the, you know, we all live in a dream, but who's the dreamer? And there was a possible way of interpreting the ending that that the whole series was actually the dream of the woman who was Laura Palmer at the end, or that new character. You know what I mean? She had that, she had a person killed in her lounge room, you know? So obviously she'd been through some kind of recent murder or trauma or something. So maybe the whole series is meant to be like some kind of nightmare of that woman who Cooper somehow comes to at the end. Do you understand what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that gets back to the whole movie cliche that some of the film where the whole entire film is just a nightmare or a dream. And that's a cliche that annoys a lot of people. But this is more nuanced than that.
It is more nuanced, but, like, you got to remember that Mulholland Drive, that is what happens in Mulholland Drive. Everything up until the point
where...
And
yeah, it does, but he's able to pull it off. I wouldn't say that's cliche at all.
The last 20 minutes of Mulholland Drive is the only thing that's real. Everything else is a dream before that. So, I mean, I don't know if he did that in this new version of Twin Peaks, but it is a possible way of interpreting it. And again, it's something I guess we've got to mull over a little. It's certainly, look, you know, as I said, I look forward to seeing it come out on Blu-ray. If we're lucky, we'll probably get an hour or two of extra things that weren't included, you know. He likes to do that. And also, Criterion Collection is releasing Fire Walk With Me with all the extra footage added to it. That's coming out, I think, this month on Criterion Collection Blu-ray. So, you know, we need to get Fire Walk With Me with the extra footage and, you know, just study all this stuff again. I mean, no matter what you say about David Lynch, he gets you studying his work. And, I mean, what other filmmaker, you know, can you say that much that you are that interested in what's going on? That, you know, you will watch it and rewatch it. You'll debate it. You'll do three podcasts with Robert Stark and Pelita on it. I mean, who can you say that about, you know?
We are getting close to the end of the show. Richard, when is your... film The Second Coming finally, Volume 2, finally coming out?
It's going to be playing at the Melbourne Underground Film Festival, which in Melbourne on October the 28th to November 3rd. I'll be playing it in there. And then I probably am going to put it online for a while for free, so everyone from you know, who's a fan of the original one, which is online at the moment, you can make a link with this podcast where people can check out the original Volume 1. So I might put it online for free for a month and then take them both offline and then look to do the, what's it called, you know, the DVD and Blu-ray release of the film.
We can record a show on that in about a month.
Yeah, that's right, in about a month. Yeah, I'll chuck it up online so everyone can watch it. And I don't mind if people pirate it and turn it into, what's it called, a torrent or whatever. I've never had a problem with people pirating my work. My only thing is that if there is a version available, which there is most of my work, you can get a DVD version of it somewhere in the world. If you like it, go buy it. You know, that's all I would say. And, you know, buy a hard copy. I'll put it online and then we can talk about it. But, you know, it's been great talking to you here, boys. And hopefully we'll do this other one tomorrow.
Awesome.
Thanks, Richard Wollstonecraft, and also thanks, Pilliter.
Awesome, guys.
Thank you, Pilliter. Cheers, mate. Ciao.